U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Hello, I'm Bill McGurn, filling in for Paul Jagot, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal. Lots in the news. James Comey has given a town hall, put out a lot of criticism there. And meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi is seems to be good with going after U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr, but not impeachment. And the question is whether she's going to be able to keep that impeachment urge contained in her own party. With me today is the brilliant Kyle Peterson. Hey, Kyle.
Hello, hello.
And why don't we start off, Kyle? James Comey, who's written a book and certainly not been silent since he left his position, was sacked as director of the FBI, came out with a lot of criticism last night during a town hall. Did you catch any of it?
Yeah, one of the things that was interesting that he was asked was, he was asked, do you think the Russians have leverage over President
right.
Trump? And he said, I don't know the answer to that. Do you think it's possible? He said, yes.
Right, which is an extraordinary claim for a director of the former director of the FBI to make, especially now that we have the Mueller report saying there's no conclusion. Remember, John Brennan, the former CIA chief, was going around saying Trump was a Russian agent. And then when the Mueller report came out, he said, well, I had bad info. But it seems this is an incendiary charge to argue that the president is either an agent of a foreign government or that a foreign government is somehow blackmailing him into decisions. Don't you find that incredible with no proof?
Right.
From an FBI director.
Right. And it's one that is, it's the difficulty of proving a negative. I mean, the Mueller right. investigation went on for a long time. The list of people that were interviewed, the list of documents that were procured and rifled through is very long. And yet we're still in a situation where Comey is saying it's possible that there's some compromise
right.
on the president. You get to a point where it's like, you know, can you prove that there's no such thing as, you know, purple elephants living in Antarctica? Well,
right.
you know, I can't really prove that there's
right.
not.
Well, and he made a lot of charges last night. I believe he said that he thought that the Mueller report revealed clear criminal intent in some of the president's actions, which are otherwise lawful, such as trying to get Don McGahn fired. But, I mean, you don't know that. You would think that, as the attorney general points out, that the case for that criminal intent, in other words, that you're covering up something that would show you to be an agent of the Russians, if that's gone, if that isn't the reason, maybe you're just angry or something. It's again, it seems extraordinary for a former director of the FBI to be so publicly antagonistic and really using the credibility of his old office to mount these charges with no proof.
Right. And he raised the possibility, I'm looking for it in the transcript, I forget if he was asked whether the president should be prosecuted after he leaves office.
Right.
And he was open to that. I mean, he said we need to think about whether that's the kind of thing that we want to do to a former president. But he didn't say one way or another, which to your point, I think really raises the question of why. I mean, I realize he has a book now out in paperback, CNN was quick to note, but why, as a former FBI director, would you get up on a stage and, you know, say those kind of things and raise those
right.
kind of...
Let's dwell on that point for a minute, because one of the arguments critics of the president have made is that Bob Mueller did not decide to bring charges on obstruction because of longstanding Justice Department regulations saying you can't indict a sitting president. But Mr. Comey's right. You can indict one afterward. I mean, if it's true that he didn't bring these charges because of that rule, then he really shouldn't be a special counsel, because what are you doing then? If you're saying I'm not going to bring any charges, then you shouldn't take the job. It's meaningless. So a lot of this is just, it just seems to me, people unwilling to give up the central narrative. The interesting thing about the part, does Russia still hold something over his head? I mean, James Comey won't give it up after a 2-year counterintelligence investigation that I think, confirms pretty decisively there was no conspiracy and the president didn't do these things. So why would an FBI agent, of all people, former FBI director, be touting this stuff?
Well, and that's not the only thing that he won't give up. Right. One of the most interesting parts of it to me, the town hall last night, was he was asked, if looking back at the 2016 election, he intervened to while saying that Hillary Clinton had been extremely careless with the email server. Mm-hmm. He said that it wouldn't be prosecutable. Then, 2 weeks before the election, he sent a letter to Congress saying that they'd found new evidence and were reopening the investigation. Some analysts looking at the polling have suggested that letter was enough to swing the election possibly to President Trump. He was asked last night whether, what would he do differently? He said, quote, "I think I'd likely do it the same way." That's in the CNN transcript.
Right. A man who's just not learned his look. A lot of the interesting things about Citizen Comey is, look, when he met with President Trump, he said, look, I'm not a weasel. I'm honest and above board in my, but every action that he seems to have taken with regard to President Trump was weaselly. I mean, including leaking memos that, as far as I understand, contained some of which contained classified information to get a special counsel after he left. He didn't. When people talk about the bias in the FBI, the inspector general who investigated the Hillary Clinton email investigation said that every action they took was within their discretion, and he wasn't going to second-guess that to suggest it was done by bias. However, the real claim of bias is to compare how they handled the investigation with Mrs. Clinton emails into the investigation with Trump staff. I mean, they didn't go to him and say, we have a concern that there might be Russian influence on your campaign. The Hillary team got special deals and so forth. The director was writing her exoneration even before his agents had interviewed them. I mean, it looks pretty weaselly to me.
And the defensiveness about it is, I think, what is maybe the most telling. I mean, he said, we were facing a 500-year flood. We had never been in a situation like this. But if you think looking back 2 years after an inspector general has studied this and said that, your behavior was insubordinate and was extraordinary, right, looking back, if you can't think of a different way you would have approached some of these situations, I think that is just
right. And Mr. Comey's telling everyone else has failings. The deputy attorney general who said that, Rod Rosenstein, last night he accused him of not having a strong character. Look, we know already that James Baker, the FBI counsel, and Mr. McCabe are under criminal investigation, one for leaks and to the press that were unauthorized and so forth. So we know that those investigations are going on. We know that Congress has made a bunch of referrals of people in DOJ and the FBI. We don't know the names because it's so wrapped up in classified information. And we know Mr. Barr is investigating. And we know that Mr. Horowitz, an Obama appointee who serves as Inspector General, he's investigating as well. So there's a lot that's going, and you have to wonder whether or not they find anything criminal that Mr. Comey did. What kind of shop was he running to have all these people? He admitted last night that Peter Strzok and Lisa Page discredited the Bureau and thought that they deserved strong sanction. And that they got it. I'm not sure just having to leave the FBI is kind of sufficient for the kind of abuses that they're accused of doing. But otherwise, these were his people. I mean, because this FBI investigation was done at the top, this wasn't some, field office in Topeka that was doing it. These were the people right around Director Comey.
Right, and I think that gets to the issue here, which is the moral sanctimony that is at play here. There are things that President Trump is his own worst enemy, and he is impulsive, and he, as the Mueller report shows, does not always make the best decisions when he's directing mm-hmm. his subordinates to do things, and sometimes they decide not to do those things, which turns out to be right. The right decision and the end. But the fact that you have the FBI director just not recognizing any of the details of what the lack of collusion, nothing in the Mueller report suggested that there was any ties to any Russians that were of any significance at the top of the campaign is just kind of stunning.
Right. Okay, you've been listening to The Wall Street Journal's Potomac Watch. I'm Bill McGurn, filling in for Paul Jagot with Kyle Peterson, and we'll be back in a minute.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Hello, I'm Bill McGurn, filling in for Paul Jagot today. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal with Kyle Peterson. We've been discussing James Comey and the FBI. One last thing, two recent developments this week, Kyle. One is a report in The Hill by John Solomon that a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State interviewed Christopher Steele just a few days, 10 days, I think, before the FISA warrant was sought. And in that interview, he kind of introduced a whole bunch of kind of crazy conspiracy theories. And he also mentioned one of them specific was some hacking operation the Russians were supposedly running out of their consulate in Miami. And the person interviewing him wrote it all down and said, it's worth noting there is no Russian consulate in Miami. So she sent this note to various government officials. The names have been blacked out, so we don't quite know, but a lot of people suspect the FBI had it, which would put a different spin on the FISA report. The FBI has been arguing that you don't have to verify all the information you put forward if you can say that the source who gave it to us is very reliable, right? You also, part of what they swear to is they don't know any derogatory information about the informant, in this case, Mr. Steele. But the question is, if they knew this kind of stuff, they already knew that he had been let go by the FBI at some point, that he'd being paid at Mrs. Clinton. This is going to, you know, I think Director Comey's name is on that warrant. This may change things in a very unhappy direction for a lot of the FBI and DOJ officials involved.
Right, and that's the other shoe that's left to drop here.
Right.
So the Mueller report is one side, one piece of the story. Another piece of the story is the Steele dossier, how it was created, how it was circulated.
Right.
There's a Justice Department Inspector General that is going to put out a report on that shortly. I'm not sure if we know when exactly that's coming, but there's going to be a lot of information there that tells another piece of the story that
the president has said he's going to declassify all this information at some point. It sounded like he meant June or July.
Right. So there's a lot of information there that may not be quite so favorable to Mr. Comey's story here.
Right. Okay. We'll leave it there. Let's move over to the other big issue. Impeachment. I mean, in some sense, impeachment has been in the air for Democrats since they took back the House in November. And Jerry Nadler, the new House Judiciary Committee chairman, would be the man to run it. And believe me, there's no Democrat who wouldn't like to be the man who impeached Donald Trump. Jerry Nadler's problem is that his speaker, his boss, Nancy Pelosi, doesn't want impeachment proceedings to begin because she calculates that it will be bad for her party, and especially it would risk the majority that she won in 2018 that has made her speaker. Do you think she's right in that it would be bad for Democrats? She said that President Trump is trying to goad them into impeachment. I don't think that's actually true because that's a high-risk strategy for the president. But I think she's trying to put it that way so she can say, don't do what the president wants. But I think she may be right in her calculation that it is that if Democrats took that step, it might not be helpful.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. I do think that Pelosi is trying to play both sides here. And it's very shrewd on her part. I mean, she's trying to placate a resistance wing of the party that wants impeachment at all costs, while also protecting her majority, protecting some of the Democrats who were elected last November from swing districts, from suburban areas. The thing that's interesting here too is the contempt stuff is playing in this as well. So there right.
the recent vote by the Judiciary Committee to hold Attorney General Bill Barr in contempt for refusing to turn over the full document, which means the grand jury information that's prohibited by law from being turned over.
Right, and they also may move soon to hold other Trump administration right. officials in contempt. So Adam Schiff this week is talking about how he wants to consolidate the date when we take up these contempt resolutions. So they're talking about having an omnibus contempt vote where they just hold the officials in mass in contempt. And that, I think, plays to Pelosi's strategy where they're trying to keep the investigations going, keep them going slowly, keep them on simmer. Without...
They're trying to say to their kids who are clamoring to go to Disney World, we're not going to Disney World, but here's $10. Go down to the parish carnival or something, you know, and ride in the Ferris wheel. Is that going to be enough?
I think it will be enough. I mean, from Pelosi's standpoint, I think she's right. I mean, you get to a point where impeachment is always a political decision. It's a political animal. You get to a point where the first Democratic presidential debate the 2020 election is coming in June. So we are weeks away from the presidential election, the primary getting into full swing. I think that you are going to have a hard time selling to the public the idea that, you know, in the next 8 months, 10 months, we're going to impeach the president right before the election.
Well, yeah, let's put some numbers on that. I believe there's a recent poll. I think it's from the Washington Post, showing 58% of the public against impeachment and only 28 or 29 for impeachment. So clearly the public appetite isn't there yet. And more significantly, probably for the Democrats, is that polls of independents show that they're opposed almost 2-1. A lot of them don't like Donald Trump, but they don't necessarily want impeachment. And here's Nancy Pelosi's dilemma. There's a Bloomberg story about the House majority, the Democrat majority, and says of 31, there's 31 Democrats in districts that Donald Trump won, and about 20 of them, I think, came in the last election where they took seats away from Republicans. So by definition, not strong Democratic seats, more purpley and previous red seats. And they came in not by attacking Donald Trump. And so the question is, if she goes down this route, she really does risk her majority, doesn't she?
I think so. And it's interesting if you look at the breakdown of the presidential candidates, where they stand on this. So the three that have come out most forcefully for moving toward impeachment, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and Beto O'Rourke, are all sort of on the left-leaning right. progressive side of the party. They're trying to activate the base, get their polling up as we go into these first debates. Whereas the more moderate candidates, you know, Joe Biden has not, as far as I've right. seen, come out and make any forceful statement that we need to impeach the president, which seems to suggest that he has taken the temperature of the center of the party and he wants to he wants to keep it open as we go into the 2020.
Well, a couple of things about those seats. You're right. I think the a lot of these people that hold those seats are very scared that the activists, the AOC wing, maybe pushing them to more extreme positions. And most of them campaigned on being reasonable, moderate people, right? They campaigned on health care and so forth, not on Trump. I'll give you two examples. One is Connor Lamb. Do you remember when he won the special election about a year ago in Pennsylvania, one from a Republican? I think he's a veteran. And he was supposed to be more moderate. Well, one of the papers in Pennsylvania was asking Pennsylvania congressmen where they stood on impeachment. He didn't get back to them. Same in my district. Actually, it's your district. You live in the same town in New Jersey. Mikey Sherrill, I believe an Annapolis grad, campaigned as a mod, didn't really campaign against Donald Trump, took a seat that had been Republican for generations, Rodney Frelinghuysen before that, his father, another Frelinghuysen. And she, too, was asked, I believe, by the Star-Ledger where she stands on impeachment, and she hasn't declared yet. So I think a lot of these people are a little nervous because they came in touting more moderate credentials. And if they're just dragged by the party, the first thing Republican candidates are going to say is, look at them, they pretended to be moderates, but they're not.
And from Pelosi's standpoint, I mean, her goal, her job is to keep the House majority.
Right.
And she knows that majorities are one in the center. They're not one at the extreme left or the extreme right. You know, another thing that sort of plays into this is an interesting fight between the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, has put out a policy that they're not going to do business with any Democratic consultants that work for candidates challenging Democratic incumbents, which has made a lot of the progressive wing of the party mad because they want to overthrow some of these,
right.
these incumbents like Dan LaPointe. Pinsky. But from the institutional standpoint of the DCCC and from Nancy Pelosi's standpoint, what they want is to keep the majority.
And what they're trying to do is, we had an editorial in the Journal the other day called the pseudo-impeachment. They want to look like they're having an impeachment to satisfy this desire, their more activist wing, without actually having an impeachment. I mean, if Mr. Nadler really wanted these documents, he'd have a lot better case if he actually, if the House passed a resolution for impeachment and began proceedings. The courts in that case look a lot more favorably on your information request. But they're not doing it. And the question is, can Mrs. Pelosi stick to her strategy? Because she's encouraging these people with the Bill Barr. Will they be satisfied with a contempt finding against Bill Barr, maybe an impeachment against Bill Barr? There's a lot of pressure, and it's not just the AOC wing. It's big donors like Tom Steyer who are writing or underwriting ads for impeachment around the country. And, of course, it's the press egging them on. So the question is whether Nancy Pelosi can really keep her grip. And one of the dangers that she has is people like AOC, who are, you know, more to the left, they're not interested in the traditional things that she has to offer, like a good committee position and so forth. I think there is interest in going on Twitter and declaring their statements, and they're interested in some kind of ideological purity, as you were kind of alluding to. So this is going to be a real test of Nancy Pelosi, whether she really has it all together.
Well, I don't think they'll be satisfied. The progressives will be satisfied with these half measures. But I do think that Pelosi stands a pretty good chance of keeping her grip, as you say. I mean, one of the things to think about is that in Congress, the leadership controls the schedule, controls what happens on the floor. So
they do. But like in this case with the contempt vote, if you had a contempt thing come out of the Judiciary Committee, it'd be very hard to keep that from coming to the floor. And certainly any impeachment effort, right? If it gets to that point, it's very hard. And there's another giant risk for Nancy Pelosi. You mentioned all these moderates that don't want to be on the record. It's possible that an impeachment vote wouldn't pass in a Democratic House because some people think, I don't want to be that far out there. We're not there.
Sure, but what I'm trying to suggest is that there are steps that need to be taken toward that process,
right.
And she can perhaps slow down some of those steps.
Right.
I mean, is the closer you get to November 2020, the less likely it seems that the more difficult impeaching becomes, because the more it looks like a political opportunism. And so, if she doesn't want to do that, what she can do is with each of these steps, just slow it down a little bit. You know, there's a contempt vote, and then there's a hearing on that, perhaps, and then there's a House vote, and then there's.
But they've gone very quickly. For example, they've gone very quickly to contempt. They went like 19 days from a committee vote on a subpoena, from a committee subpoena to contempt, where it took like 8 months with Eric Holder. So when you go that fast, after a while, you're running out of clubs.
But that's in the control of the committee chair, though,
right.
Whereas you may find that Pelosi is not quite so expeditious.
Well, we'll find out before the next election who really is the boss in the Democratic Party, at least in the House. This is Bill McGurn filling in for Paul Jagot. I'm with Kyle Peterson, and you've been listening to The Wall Street Journal's Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.